Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Many South Dakotans dream of bringing a big idea to life, and the impact of those ideas on the state and on the national economy can be enormous. But not all people are standing on level ground. What are some of the barriers to entrepreneurship, and how can we implement innovative solutions that grow the economy and change lives, possibly for generations to come? Philip Gaskin is Senior Director of Entrepreneurship for the Ewing Marion Kauffman Foundation, where he leads the strategic implementation and execution of the foundation's Zero Barriers National Strategy. He was a guest for today's Morning Philip. That's a Rapid City program sponsored by the NUMAD Group in partnership with the Bush Foundation. And Philip Gaskin is joining us today in the Black Hills Surgical Hospital studio and SDPB's Sioux Falls studio. Welcome. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me. Pleasure to be here.
How did you get interested in this kind of work?
You know, I was witnessed disconnection and not being able to take advantage of opportunity at a very, very young age, living in neighborhoods where and going to schools where some were privileged and some were not. And that lens of equity and being able to have what others have and succeed like others do has just been a driving passion of mine since a very young age. So I saw a lens of observing disconnection and then being curious as to why are there these different challenges and gaps from a very young age.
Right. So this can be all about data, too, as well as individual stories. What do we know about entrepreneurship in general? Is it in decline? Is it going up? And what are some of those numbers that help us understand this more completely?
Yeah, it's there's some signs of life and upticking in the last few years. We've been in about a 20-year stagnation in entrepreneurship and entrepreneurship rates. And so we look at what are the reasons why. And we believe that there's systemic barriers that get in the way of entrepreneurs being able to start a business or grow one. And those range from simply, who can I talk to? Who can I be connected to? To I live too far away from a major center to I can't get enough capital.
Right.
There's a range of them.
And before we talk about some of those specific barriers and innovative ways to address them, why does it matter? There's something very American about this that just says this is a place where you come, and if you have an idea, you can make that idea a reality, whether you want to make a new product or create a new service or change your community. What's at stake?
And when that firepower is out there, what's at stake is it's not a level playing field for everyone. You know, entrepreneurs, they work hard. They've got ideas, but they're not all on level playing field to succeed. And that's one of the biggest problems. And so what's at stake is that of this great nation, the viability, sustainability of our long-term economy, with looking at data. You mentioned data. So we have, in the next 20, 30 years, the population will be mostly women and people of color, or half of that. Two populations that are having the biggest challenges getting in the game, getting capital on equal footing, and those different types of things. So what's at stake is if we don't have more of the demographics that are going to be populating the nation, creating businesses and employing people who can be in the economy, the stake is the future of the economy long term.
How big is the gap?
It depends on the barrier, but if we just look at capital alone, 83% of entrepreneurs that try to get a bank loan don't do so or cannot do so. We've got 27% of founders who receive venture capital attended an Ivy League university. What about the ones that don't? So education comes into this. 2% of venture capital flows to women-led firms.
And 2%.
2%.
2%, okay.
And only 1% goes to African Americans.
1%.
1%.
We just have to say those numbers again, don't we?
Yeah,
it's pretty stark.
We do.
Native American, any status on Native American?
It's less than 1%.
Even smaller.
Even smaller. And goes on and on. And so with those type of numbers in front of us, and then bring in rural America,
right?
Then you have the geographic barriers of being farther away from larger centers and infrastructure and all of those different types of factors. So when we have three major sectors of our economy, rural America, women, people of color, all struggling, it's a large, fairly large chunk of what we have to be paying attention to, right, to help the whole, right?
Governor Kristi Noem talked in her State of the State address recently here in South Dakota about the great work ethic of South Dakotans. And when we talk about people not standing on a level playing field, it would it be accurate to say that some people might be putting the same amount of work into something but not getting the results that someone else who is starting from a different place might be?
Oh, yes. Absolutely. And so not the leveling the playing field is so important. You know, and for like we say sometimes democratizing the opportunity for entrepreneurship and making sure it's available for all. Hard work's being done. Americans do hard work. It's not about entrepreneurs not doing hard work or not having passion to get out there and do it. It just can get difficult for too many of them.
What is causing, is it just a bias? Is it an education? Like when we pick out sort of the why, help us understand why we see this lack of equity.
It ranges from unintentional or implicit bias. It ranges from just not being known. I go to the, when I started with disconnection to connection, it's, and when we look at studies of entrepreneurs and the stages that they go through and where those that end up succeeding, what barriers did they get through where so many others fail? And it's the easy ones. It's who can I talk to? Who can you connect me to? Who maybe has that first $500 that can get me on that way, which can be harder to get than the $50,000 later on or the $500,000 later on. And so our belief is that the more connected these entrepreneurial communities or ecosystems are for entrepreneurs, the more they'll succeed. So there are currently there are too many steps and pathways that they've got to try to find on their own because they're going and trying to get through that maze, and some succeed and hit it, and some, too many, say, okay, I guess got to go back into the day job and make it and end up giving up. And our one more stat for you, just over 3 out of 1,000 people a month start a business. It needs to be more than that. So we say, what about the other 997 that are in that community?
That group,
what could they be doing? We call them supporters or ecosystem builders to help entrepreneurs and their communities be more.
Right. And some of those ideas are solving the problems in a community where you look around and you say, this is what this community needs. I would love, you know, I have an idea for how to address it, but then nothing can happen.
Right.
So often but it also could be an idea that changes the world. It can change a community and it could change generations of a family, but it can also change a nation.
Absolutely. One of the things that we find is in the same community or city, that same struggling entrepreneur has 2 or 3 in with the same interest or passion on the other side of town doing the same thing and don't even know each other or don't even know each other exists. So again, back to the connectedness of how does the whole get to know each other and be more connected and perhaps then team up and work on things together or become entrepreneurs together and open up the nonprofit together or what have you.
So. Sure. What about policy challenges? You know, when we talk about, you mentioned access to capital, certainly in tribal communities, you know, that it doesn't exist from a policy standpoint in the same way that it would here in Rapid City.
Right.
Do you find that, what are some of the solutions other than, you know, connection? Connection's a very important part. What are some of the other ways to, what are some of the other barriers? And then let's talk about ways to remove those barriers.
Well, you mentioned policy, and we have an entrepreneurship policy area that's focusing on, you know, getting policy makers to be more advocates for entrepreneurs. And so whether it's legislation, whether it's permits, what is it? What are the more entrepreneurial friendly things that state, local, and federal leaders can do to advocate for entrepreneurs? We have one of the things that we released last year is America's New Business Plan, which we have a separate URL for that website for called startusupnow.org. And what it is a multi-point plan, bipartisan plan, that we worked with folks on both sides of the aisle to come up with. Here are just simple steps and things that policymakers can do to advocate for entrepreneurs, and we're trying to help the field build a coalition for that. We take entrepreneurs to Capitol Hill once a year for Hill Day, where entrepreneurs go and they sit down with their congressperson and sit and just talk about the challenges that the entrepreneur is going through right in the congressperson's district, so the congressperson can get an understanding of what's underneath a lot of the barriers. And the congresspeople are always so grateful to hear these stories and understand it helps them, you know, with legislation they need to do locally or in their state.
When we talk about bias, mm-hmm. Is there a policy? Like, how do you address bias? Just when someone comes to you and says, I can't get this business started. And what I'm really hearing, I hate to say this, sounds like it's because I'm female, or it's because I'm black, or I have this feeling, or I have reason to believe, pretty clear reason to believe, that there's bias at work. How do you begin?
It's, the work on bias and race, equity, diversity, inclusion, bias, all of that is in conversation and awareness. And it's bringing together and storytelling and data as well. I mean, there are studies that show that there are two entrepreneurs of different colors that go into a bank for a bank loan, and one had one conversation versus another conversation, how they were treated differently just on skin color. And you can have the same thing as it to gender. And so
maybe even if your name sounds like your skin color might be different. There's been research on that with college admissions, where it's just if your name sounds, in quotation marks, ethnic, you might be placed in a different pile.
Right. And so bringing data forward and stories, and so much is bringing things to life for folks that may not understand, and bringing it into something that's tangible where they can really, relate to it. Because when you begin with the storytelling, especially at community-based storytelling, and what happens is people have the awareness happen, the light bulb come on saying, oh, now I get it. But it's, here we go with connectioning, and it's making sure that talking and that sharing is actually happening. Mm-hmm. Because bias can be so hidden, as we know. And but I'm hopeful and confident that we're going to move past as much as we can in that area.
How about, let's go back to this idea of rural. And as we talk about connection, one of the challenges in rural South Dakota is that connection can be pretty far away. Is this as simple as utilizing technology? What are some of the ways to overcome some of those barriers that are really impactful for people in rural communities?
I think technology is one of them, but it's about resource sharing. So what type of resources do you share over technology, learning resources or online forums where you're able to have everyone, whether it's on a video conference or whatever, everyone's faces, everyone together, talking about the solutions and getting through that and trying to get over that barrier of distance. I think for people that are disconnected geographically in rural is that spirit of cooperation and looking at the co-opting, which is something that's becoming talked about more. What are ways that communities can pool together what they have in order to spur and create, and actually then have a great attraction into them, versus that always being the other way around, is that, oh, I must leave where I am and go to the bigger city. I must do that. But it's certainly there. But I think using technology is very important.
Can you give me an example of someone who has done this? Because is your job to mainly sort of organize and create the right environment, to create the ecosystem, to talk about connection, to do things like a startusupnow.org as a toolkit and a resource? Tell me how someone has applied that foundation and done something that you find remarkable or groundbreaking.
Well, I think we try to provide as much resource and tools, as we call them, to as many people as possible, far and wide. And that's through our entrepreneurship research and creating evidence that decision makers can use, and understanding data and trends that could affect them locally and how to use that to move them forward. Our policy work I mentioned, and we have two direct operating programs, 1 Million Cups, which is a volunteer-led community of and over 170 locations across the nation, where entrepreneurs once a week can be with a community of those that support them to try to work through their own solutions and barriers. And our ecosystems, Kauffman Ecosystems Playbook, which is for as many people far and wide in communities to just learn and understand how do you build an effective community and some best practices around that. So I want to make sure that I mention that it's dissemination of those tools. As far as you know, people that are succeeding from those, we get feedback all the time on just the some large things and some small things that are happening where people are beginning to self-identify and understand best practices they can use from other communities.
Philip Gaskin, Senior Director of Entrepreneurship for the Kauffman Foundation, thank you so much for being here with us today. We appreciate taking a little extra time for the listeners of SDPB Radio.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.